He received his bachelor's from Concordia Ann Arbor, and later in 87, his MDiv from this institution. Just this past spring, his PhD, also from Concordia Seminary. He served as assistant pastor of Trinity Lutheran in Bemidji, Minnesota, and as pastor at St. Matthew's in Holt, Michigan. He and his wife and their three children now live in St. Louis, where Pastor Bierman, Dr. Bierman, serves as assistant pastor at the Lutheran Church of Webster Gardens in Webster Groves, and as you know, serving on our faculty as assistant professor of systematics. Would you please join me in welcoming Dr. Joel Bierman?
First of all, let me express my thanks to Dean Rockman for entrusting me with this opportunity to address you this morning, you the future pastors of Christ Church. And indeed, I have to admit, I have been anticipating the day when I would at last be allowed the chance to unload some of my thoughts about what it means to be a pastor. And it is a delight that the chance has been afforded me already. The topic, maintaining balance in the pastoral ministry. And it is a worthwhile topic. And although the topic was determined even before the speaker had been confirmed, the parameters of the topic are sufficient to provide me enough room to say what I want to say to you today. Actually, I could say everything that needs saying about maintaining balance in the pastoral ministry in a single sentence. Maintaining balance in the pastoral ministry is summed up this way. Forget it. There is no such thing as balance in the pastoral ministry. Now you can all go home. And yet, while you might indeed appreciate the extra time to spend with your studies or perhaps your wife, it would not be fair for me to dismiss you without offering a little support for what may seem a rather flippant view. But understand this. I am in dead earnest about this. I have been thinking about it literally for years, and even more intensely in these last few years as I've listened and marveled at conversations among seminarians and their families about what they think it means to be a pastor. I'm amazed at what sometimes I overhear. It may seem hard to believe, but I am convinced that it's true. When a man is serving as God's pastor, there is no balance. It is an all-out, nothing held back, total investment sort of thing. You give it all, period. I'm sure that part of the problem with this persistent idea that one must exercise balance in the pastoral ministry stems from our continued use of Aristotle and his teaching of what has been dubbed the golden mean. Now, some of you know that I have a genuine appreciation for the insights and the legacy of Aristotle. However, I also readily acknowledge that the goal of finding the balance point between two competing forces and labeling that point moderation and therefore the proper goal certainly has its limits. I suspect that your spouse would be less than overwhelmed if you were to announce to her one day that you loved him or her with perfect moderation. Nor are we instructed to love God with all the powers of heart, strength, and soul kept in careful check with careful moderation. Sometimes moderation or balance is simply ruled out. The exercise of the office of the pastoral ministry, I contend, is one of those times when balance is ruled out. And I believe this is the way that Luther saw it. By way of fulfilling obligation, I'll offer you one Luther quote this morning. James Kittleson cites Luther's description of what he considered to be the ideal pastor. And Luther has 9 points. First, a good preacher should be able to teach well, correctly, and in an orderly fashion. Secondly, he should have a good head on his shoulders. Thirdly, he should be eloquent. Fourthly, he should have a good voice. Fifthly, he should have a good memory. Sixthly, he should know when to stop. Seventhly, he should be constant and diligent about his affairs. Eighthly, he should invest body and life, possessions and honor in it. Ninthly, he should be willing to let everyone vex and hack away at him. I especially like the vex and hack away comment. But that would be another topic for another time. I think the terms particularly relevant today are items 7 and 8. A pastor should be constant and diligent about his affairs, and he should invest body and life, possessions and honor in it. Doesn't sound like Luther is counseling pastors to find the balance point or urging an approach of moderation. And this stems, it seems to me, at least in part, from Luther's consistent insistence on the importance of vocation. And indeed, it is the doctrine of vocation that will undergird my entire argument. And of course, you knew it had to be all about doctrine, didn't you? And so with the time remaining, I will consider four aspects that will support or illustrate my contention that there should be no balance in the pastoral ministry. I'll start with the doctrine involved, and then consider the additional categories of attitude, relationships, and time. First, the doctrine. The key, of course, is a right understanding of the doctrine of vocation. And the doctrine of vocation must be hung firmly in an understanding of the two kingdoms or the two kinds of righteousness. Because of our passive righteousness in the right-hand kingdom, coram Deo, before God, we are free to pursue the active righteousness of the left-hand kingdom, coram hominibus, before men. That's what the theology of vocation is all about, fulfilling active righteousness in the left-hand kingdom before men. And Gustav Wingren is the definitive work in his Luther on Vocation. If you haven't yet, read it. God has given you something to do. Do it. That's the theology of vocation. And your vocation includes all that God has entrusted to you, not just your career. Included are spouse, parent, child, friend, neighbor, citizen, student, employee, member of a church. All of those are things God has entrusted to you in various ways. All of these things combine to be your vocation. This vocation is given to you by God. You serve Him as you do your vocation for the good of others. And so you have a God-given responsibility to do them well. You do not do your vocation with moderation. You pour yourself into it. You throw everything into it. And you strive to do it with all that you've got, holding nothing back. That's just what it means to live life in this world God's way. When you become a pastor then is added to the list of all the items that make up your vocation. You are then father, husband, pastor, neighbor, friend, and write down the list. That's you. That's your vocation. Pastor does not trump all else. Pastor is what you've been given to do in the left hand, along with all the other things that remain part of your vocation in the left hand, where you actively pursue the righteousness God has in mind for you. The various parts of your vocation are not then in competition with one another, but all those various parts of your vocation all coalesce and come together to determine your tasks in life and the things that occupy you and your attention. You are a single person, a unity. And so is your vocation in the left-hand realm, a unity. So you are a single person, a unity, and your vocation then as a single person, a unity, in the left-hand realm is a unit. It's one vocation you do as you serve. Your vocation, as well as your right-hand righteousness, coram Deo, that passive righteousness, together, your vocation in the left hand and your righteousness before God in the right hand are all reinforced and made fresh daily through your time spent in God's Word. Here, in God's Word, you are affirmed, God forgives you, God challenges you, God shapes you, God directs you. He fills your life, He directs you out into your vocation. Call it what you want. Quiet time, devotional life, personal worship, doesn't matter. You need to do it. You need to be in the Word. You need to be speaking to God, letting God speak to you consistently so you can be centered again in your righteousness before Him and then driven again into striving for righteousness out there in the world, in the left-hand kingdom, in your vocation. That's the doctrine that runs beneath this all. we are doing our vocation as God's servants. Second area I want to address is attitude. Springing from the doctrinal foundation is the next most important element in getting this non-balance in the pastoral ministry figured out. Now, attitude has become so overemphasized in our society that it begins to sound trite. But it's true nonetheless. Attitude is essential, perhaps even everything. You know from your own experience, your attitude determines so much about how you do things, the way you do them, and your attitude as you do them. You need to have it straight from the beginning. When you become a pastor, you gain a new definition of your own identity. The fact is, you are pastor. Sometimes, among certain people, you even lose your own first name. You're just pastor. Quite honestly, that was rather odd for me for a long while. And I resisted it. I didn't want to just be pastor. But over time, I learned a valuable lesson that to the people in the parish, it is exceedingly comforting to know a man simply as pastor, shepherd, one who cares for them. You're that man. You're pastor. You're shepherd. You are pastor for people. And so you should not resist the vocation and its implications. People will see you in new ways. Family members will look at you differently than they did before. Probably extended family members, your wife will know better. Friends from back home will look at you a little differently. They'll wonder if you're going to change and hope that you're not different because someone stuck Reverend in front of your name. But the fact is, you are different. Your vocation has shifted. People will expect certain things of you they didn't expect of you before. You'll be saying every prayer at every family gathering. No, it's not the same as it is for other people. And theoretically, nothing more should be expected of you than is expected of any other Christian, but we all know it's not that way. You will indeed live in a glass house. So what? It's just the way it is. It's what it means. Fair is not the issue. It's the way it is. People expect things of their pastor. They expect things of you. They expect things of your family. And it's okay. You're a pastor. Accept it. Don't fight it. Don't resist it. Don't try to educate your people out of their wrong ideas. Simply accept the fact that you are pastor, and there's some new territory that comes with it. The fact is, you must embrace the identity of pastor. Let it shape the understanding of your vocation. And your attitude then, as you do embrace that vocation, will come along. You'll begin to see this as a positive thing, not a negative thing to be resisted. And that attitude of embracing your vocation, embracing your identity, must be then conveyed to all that you encounter. You are not just doing a job. You're not just fulfilling a checklist. You are serving God in your vocation. You're doing what is arguably one of the most exciting, engaging, challenging, fulfilling tasks in all of creation. There's nothing better than being a pastor. I can say that wholeheartedly. Yes, as a pastor, people may seem to forget that you have a first name. You're just a pastor. Yes, people will interrupt your routine. They will make impositions on you that you don't ordinarily approve of. Yes, people will call you in the middle of the night with emergencies. And yes, people will call you in the middle of the night, sometimes with no emergency, which is far worse. Yes, great demands are made of you and your family. People expect a lot of you. You're a pastor. That's the way it is. You don't fight it. You don't resist it. You embrace it. It's all okay. It's all just part of doing the vocation of pastor. Relish it. Savor it. Communicate your love for your vocation to those you encounter, especially your wife and your kids. Attitude, I believe, is part of what Luther is getting at with that ninth requirement about being willing to let everyone vex and hack away at you. When you have an attitude of, I am a pastor, this is what God has given me to do, it's okay when people vex and hack away at you. And they will. Brings us to point three, relationships. It is important that you remember Your vocation is made up of many elements. You are husband, you are father, you are friend, you are neighbor, you are citizen, and you are pastor. And as I said, pastor does not trump all. You cannot see the various responsibilities of your unified vocation in conflict as weights to be balanced in a scale, notwithstanding the nice artwork for the advertisement of this convocation. The fact is, the various parts of your vocation should not be seen as at odds with one another. God gives you what you are to do. As husband, father, pastor, neighbor, citizen, you have things to do. And rather than seeing these things at odds with one another, fighting with one another, learn to see them working in harmony as you strive to fulfill what God has given you to do. Sometimes in the parish, my responsibilities as pastor would take me away from my family for an evening, not uncommon, sometimes even an entire month. Rather than lamenting the fact, I learned to recognize that this was simply what was asked of me to fulfill my vocation. And I made sure that as I was fulfilling this part of my vocation, I was also doing what was necessary to fulfill the other parts of my vocational responsibilities to my family. I kept my attitude on track, not begrudging the time asked of me, and that enabled me to help my family to keep their attitudes on track. Now, obviously, for those of you who are married and for those of you who someday will be married, it is critical that you as husband are caring for your wife so that she can also share in the joy of doing her vocation. Being a pastor's wife is a part of her vocation, and it should not be viewed with disdain or remorse, and neither should it be seen to trump all else and eclipse everything in her life. Rather, it is now part of who she is. Seen, and her vocation is something that has eternal significance, just as yours does. Never forget, Luther was fond of saying that the nursemaid caring for the children could be serving God better than a whole monastery full of monks. Your vocation serves God, whatever it is you've been given to do. The truth of serving God in your current vocation applies across the board, and the vocation of your wife and even your young children is every bit as significant within God's kingdom as the vocation you fulfill in the left-hand realm. And so the fact is, when you cultivate your marriage relationship with your wife, you are doing God's work. You don't go to church to do God's work. Sure, that's part of it. But you are doing God's work when you care for your wife and when you care for your family. And when you spend an afternoon with your family or an hour playing catch with your son, you're serving God. Part of your vocation. I have been told, and I believe implicitly, that it's true that one of the best things that a father can do for his children is to love his wife and to demonstrate it. And I think this also applies in the ministry. One of the best things that a pastor can do for the people in his parish is to love his family and to demonstrate it. This communicates something profound as an example of a man doing his vocation and so honoring God. And as an aside, I would have to say that one of the greatest assets in striving to fulfill my vocation as pastor was certainly and continues to be my wife. She understands, and she understood throughout the ministry, the time I was in the parish, what it meant for a pastor to do his vocation. And she supported that fully. She even supported it when it meant that sometimes I would arrive home at 4:30 only to turn around and leave home again at 6:30 for the rest of the night. On the many occasions when that occurred, I knew her response would not be one of complaints, or one of heavy sighs, or one of laments, wishing I was doing something else. But she would do what she always did. She would simply smile and tell the kids that Daddy was going to the church to help people, or going out to tell people about Jesus. It was all just part of the vocation. It was all okay. Nobody was being neglected. Her ready support was critical and made my task so much easier. You see, there is no place in the parsonage or in the pastor's home for a resentful, woe is me mentality. It cannot be there. Strive in your own heart for an attitude of grateful joy for the vocation entrusted to you. And my friends, expect the same of your wife and teach her to embrace the vocation of pastoral ministry with joy. Nothing subverts the pastoral ministry more than those who are in the midst of it, complaining about it and griping about it and wishing it was different than it is. Hopefully by now you have figured out that being a pastor is not a 9-to-5 job. So I've come to my fourth point, talking a little bit about time. We all admit that, of course, being a pastor is not a 9-to-5 job. It's so much more. But I am convinced that there are still so many elements of a business or a career mindset that cling to this thinking about the pastoral ministry as it's carried out today among us. Being a pastor is not 40 hours a week. It is not even 80 hours a week. It is 168 hours a week. And in case you didn't do the math, that's 24 times 7. You do not need to count how many hours you spent on the job today. What's the point? You're a pastor. It's who you are. Every day, all day long, 7 days a week, you're pastor. Do what it takes. You are a pastor. All of your time belongs to your vocation. All of it. It is, after all, what God has given you to do. Now, beyond this fundamental observation, which is no great insight, I admit, I am quite reluctant to spell out too many details about the use of your 168 hours each week. Now, I know it is altogether in vogue to schedule and manage your time carefully. People carry Palm Pilots so they can keep every 15-minute segment carefully slotted out. And I'm not trying to diminish what is of value there in learning how to manage your time. However, I think that for most pastors, time management is not nearly as important as vocation recognition. It starts with realizing who you are, what's expected of you, and what it means to be pastor. Use your time, all of it, to do your vocation. It's that simple. And so rather than give you some handy rules of thumb like make no Friday evening appointments, make that sacred family time, or spend at least one evening each week alone with your wife, or spend every Saturday night preparing yourself for worship the next morning, or make family events part of your unbreakable, untouchable schedule, rather than giving you any of those rules that I know many people operate with, I would suggest that when you grasp your vocation and its responsibilities in all aspects of your vocation, you will learn what to do and how to get it done. You'll figure it out yourself. You'll write your own rules. You'll decide what works for you, what doesn't work for you. Sometimes you'll learn the hard way when your wife lets you know you've dropped the ball. But you'll learn. And you'll develop your own rules to help you get through the daily routine of doing your vocation. My rules of thumb aren't necessarily yours. You find yours and you make it work. And how do you learn this? School of experience, through the personal devotional life that you are encouraging and cultivating. God teaches and God directs. I will offer, though, a few specific points, if I may. First one, I've already alluded to, but when it comes to time, do not grumble over the investment of evenings. You guys know it's just the way it is, most of us, when we do pastoral ministry. We're in parishes where evenings are chocked full of things to do. When I was in the parish ministry, it would be typical for me to spend 4 or even 5 evenings a week at church. That's a lot. I was there for meetings, there for making evangelism calls, there for doing counseling. Whatever it was, I wasn't home. That's just the way it was. It's what I had to do. And so I found other ways to fulfill other parts of my vocation. One of the things I would do was walk my children home from school and spend a little time with them in the afternoon and always eat supper together as a family before I shoved off again for the evening. You find the things that make it work. So don't grumble over the imposition of time to fulfill your office. Learn how to make it work with the rest of your vocation. Second point, and I know this will be met with some controversy and resistance, but I am a great advocate for starting a movement of getting rid of pastor's day off. Pastor's day off simply perpetuates the idea that this is just another job. and pastor needs his time away from the job because it is so darn stressful. Take the time that you need to meet your responsibilities to your family, your friends, your neighbors, as a citizen. Whatever those responsibilities for your vocation are, fulfill them and do it. If it means taking an afternoon to go shopping with your wife, do it. Don't call it pastor's day off, and don't make a big deal with the church secretary about, I'm inaccessible today, please leave me alone. What does this communicate? The pastoral vocation is turned on and off with a flip of a switch. People should always realize you are pastor. Find the time you need, make it work, but don't announce a day off. I know, my opinion. Third point, realize soon that you will never come to the end of a day having done everything that needed to be done. The responsibilities of every single aspect of your vocation are limitless, taken by themselves. Think about it for a minute. When have you ever done enough as a husband to say, there, I did it all today? When have you ever done enough as a father to your children? When have you ever done enough as a friend or a neighbor or a child to your parents? There is always something else that needs to be done, always something else you could do or should do. And the same is true of being a pastor. It's just maybe more apparent. There is always one more person you need to meet with. There is always one more book you need to study. There is always one more call that needs to be made. There is always one more bit of preparation that has to be done for Sunday's sermon. Always one more. Always. And so forget about trying to be exhaustive. Simply strive to be a faithful servant, using each day's 24 hours to do each day's tasks, and rest in God's peace at the end of that day, confident of His grace, confident that His vocation is being fulfilled in you. And number four, people sometimes ask, well, if you take this attitude toward vocation, won't you burn out? Who's going to guard against burning out? And I guess I'll give another flippant answer. Please do burn out. I would hate to go to the grave with any wick left. Make sure that you're burning your wick carefully, but don't save up everything for retirement. Do your vocation now, and do it with the zeal that God gives you. Now, I'm sure you have noticed that little, in fact, nothing has been said about time for yourself as an individual. This is not an oversight. It's altogether intentional. I don't think it needs to be said. To be a faithful servant in your vocation, you need to be a healthy servant, which means that you will take care of yourself. But even taking care of yourself can be done while fulfilling other parts of your vocation. And it's not complicated. You spend time exercising by going for a walk with your wife. You spend time getting some fresh air by playing with your kids in the backyard. You eat as a family, building bonds of family relationship. You do your vocation as you do the things that minister to yourself. And honestly, doing your vocation is not a drain. It is invigorating. Few things are more exciting than knowing you are doing exactly what God has called you to do, and you can rejoice in the doing of it. That's empowering, not draining. Your time is God's, not yours. Let Him direct you in your use of it. Now, of course, the basic premise for all I have presented this morning is not something that has to wait for the date of ordination. All of these things apply even now today as you are a student. So start to learn and practice all of your vocation now. Student does not trump all. You have a vocation as husband, son, father, brother. Fulfill that vocation. It does not get easier when you are back in real life in the parish. If you neglect parts of your vocation now and put them on hold, you will certainly continue to neglect them when your vocational responsibilities multiply and shift in the parish. And in the parish, you have nobody telling you, do the work today. And it becomes more complicated. St. Paul sums it well, I believe, in 1 Corinthians 15:58. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Your vocation is never in vain.